From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Simply put, adoption of the amendment sends a strong message that in Illinois we believe that every eligible voter should be treated equally and shall have the ability to vote for the candidates of their choice.
It means the following. One, balancing the budget won't fall on the backs of the middle class and lower income families that have to pick up the tab and pay more of their meager wages to make up for the state's lost revenue.
I just don't think after 11 years of total Democrat control, broken promises on taxes being temporary and being sufficient to solve the problems, that anybody can reasonably rely on Democrats saying they're only going to tax at these rates.
Buildings closing in downstate and in Chicago, kids that are shoved into windowless rooms, textbooks that are being opened every day by children in every part of this state that are 15 years old, small towns losing their identity, good teachers losing their jobs, the achievement gap rising in poverty-stricken districts. Those things are all a direct result of a law that today protects inequity.
It relies on a massive property tax increase. It took a long time, but I got the number out of them. $750 million tax increase over 5 years. That's terrible for jobs. It's bad for the city of Chicago.
Mr. Speaker, do you plan to tell it for a vote today in the House?
That's the plan.
Why the rush?
Why would you want to slow it down?
That would be my next question.
Would you want to slow it down?
Why does it need to be done today?
Well, why would you want to slow it down? Why would you want to do that?
Those are some of the sounds from the Illinois State Capitol in the past week. A proposal for a constitutional amendment on voting rights. A proposal for a constitutional amendment to create a graduated tax, making school funding more equitable in the eyes of some lawmakers. And a pension plan change for the city of Chicago under discussion. In fact, we were hearing there was going to be some changes for the city of Chicago. It was on the fast track, and then it hit a roadblock, a brick wall or something. We'll talk about that shortly on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel this week, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, Brian Mackey, WUIS and IPR State House reporter, and our guest this week, Carrie Lester of the Associated Press. Carrie, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me back.
What we have here, we'll start with, we heard Speaker Madigan saying he was going to call for a vote right away on making some changes to some pension plans in the city of Chicago. So I will let you guys reach for the bouquet and decide who will speak first at the state capitol to explain what this was about.
That's right. Well, we heard this week, just 48 hours after Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced that there was a proposal to overhaul some of the city's pension funds, two of them, that there was movement in the legislature to approve a fix. And, you know, there were rumblings in the State House this week that this plan could get done in as little as a day, but it appeared to hit some roadblocks, mainly because we were hearing from a number of lawmakers. Some language within the bill suggested that the city council is being amended from instructing them to raise property taxes to suggesting they should raise property taxes. But lawmakers don't want to be on the hook for that. They are saying they don't want to be on the hook for raising property taxes in Chicago and for being blamed.
It really was remarkable. You could see the fast track that this was on. As Carrie had said, a lot of headlines when the Chicago mayor had come out and saying, hey, this is the plan. And then you had a House committee with the Speaker Madigan introducing the proposal, and afterwards took a couple of questions from reporters, and that's what you heard. And it was like, so you plan to call this today? Yep. Why? What's the rush? And that went on longer than we heard in that little clip there of wondering, because that's not the typical procedure. There's no real deadline or imminent need for this. The thinking obviously being that, you know, the faster you get this through, the less time there is for opposition to really build and for legislators to be frightened off. But it was clear that that's what the speaker had intended on doing. And a subsequent hearing went on as well in the Senate, a subject matter hearing on the proposal that would have allowed it to really swiftly go through, and then that the opposition was nonetheless able to in such a quick time. I think it, Carrie is right. It's a matter of legislators not wanting to be on the hook for property taxes. And it's also the Governor Pat Quinn, not to say that it's at that point, but he appears to not be taking a liking to this plan either. He, of course, is, you know, running for re-election and wants to give people property tax relief and has talked about that and wants, you know, these checks to be cut to every homeowner and would not want to be the guy being blamed for then raising property taxes.
And he certainly needs Cook County.
At the risk of being cynical, in response to Speaker Madigan's rhetorical questions, why would you want to delay it? I would have said to him, so that members don't have the time to read it and find out what's actually in there. I think that's what it was all about.
Sunshine was brought up, and he asked for next question.
Yeah.
Well, I do think it's interesting to watch the dynamic between Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Speaker Madigan. I think I've been wondering if Madigan perhaps is not in an incredible rush to get this done. In some ways, to show Emanuel that he can't just snap his fingers and order mm-hmm. something done from Chicago.
Exactly. There were a lot of legislators saying, you know, if he wants this, he's not even here. Those same sort of arguments, just at a very base level of being a salesman.
He's on CNN so much these days, it's hard to miss him, though, right? Does he really need to come to Springfield?
And I think part of it, too, is never forget that in the back of Madigan's mind is what's best for my Democratic members. How can I keep them so that we have the majority and I remain Speaker? And so he's weighing the calculus, and is it really helpful to have the legislature, as at one point the proposal would have required by law that this property tax be increased or that there be property tax increases. That was taken out because lawmakers didn't want to be held responsible. They wanted to give that authority to the city council. Now the city council is not sure it wants it either. The thing is the pensions.
It's a hot potato.
Yeah, it's a very hot potato. And because part of this plan, aside from how are we going to pay for it, part of the plan reduces benefits and requires employees to pay more, I think that raises serious questions about its constitutionality. And it also only covers a portion of the city's workforce. It does not include police and firefighters whose pension funds are in worse shape than the laborers and other employees who this bill would apply to.
Charlie, why was it set up this way that the Illinois State Legislature has to be involved in the City of Chicago pension?
Because the statutes that created these pension funds and laid out all the particulars and the, you know, all the, what would you say, the legal language are passed by the state of Illinois.
So
the city does not have the authority on its own to, even though it's a home rule city, it can't go in and change state statutes using its home rule authority. It needs legislative approval.
So, for instance, other towns across the state of Illinois, if you worked for a municipality and paid into the Illinois Municipal Retirement Insurance Plan, is that also controlled by the legislature then?
It's set up under a statute. The legislature doesn't control it on a day-to-day basis, but all of these pension systems are set up according to law by legislation that was passed decades ago. And downstate police and fire systems, a lot of downstate communities and suburban communities have the same types of funding problems. The dollars don't have as many zeros on the end of them, but relative to the size of the community and its revenue base, they're just as drastic. Now, the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund is different. It is very solidly funded. It applies for most local government workers who aren't police and fire. And the reason it's solidly funded is because over the years, by law, municipalities have had to set aside what's called the normal cost. What is it going to cost us in the future for the benefits that Charlie Wheeler, who works for the city of Springfield, earns this year? And that money has been faithfully set aside, and so the IMRF is in really good fiscal shape.
So, Amanda Venicky, what next for this Chicago pension matter?
Rahm Emanuel working hard, trying to save a little face. The pension issue is by no means dead. there is a need when you hear from him or plenty of people to do something about those pensions. And as Charlie indicated, also those of Chicago teachers, firefighters, police officers. And yet it's, again, that I'll use the word political hot potato back and forth. So I'm sure that there are going to be plenty of phone calls going on behind closed doors. And I new proposal or a new version of this perhaps that maybe takes a lesser property tax burden because that may at this point be the only way to shove it through or some other sort of deal.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, we'll talk about a couple of constitutional amendment proposals that are moving forward at the Capitol.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, the Associated Press's Carrie Lester, and I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, House Speaker Michael Madigan was pushing his voting rights constitutional amendment forward a little bit more in the past week. So break that down for us.
Well, it's a nationally popular Democratic issue to ensure the suffrage rights of people, you know, and this would amend the state constitution to provide a clause that voters could not be discriminated upon based on race or sex or sexual orientation and a number of other qualities. And Madigan testifying in committee, and this is one of two constitutional amendments he's proposed in recent weeks. And I have just, being a little bit new here at the Capitol, found it fascinating to hear him present these amendments, to take questions from lawmakers. And he seemed to indicate that he wants to prevent future general assemblies or local election authorities from coming in and putting in place voter discrimination laws. And we've seen that in a number of surrounding states, in Ohio, in Wisconsin, over the winter, who have Republican-led legislatures that have put in place these provisions. So why Madigan is doing that now is the question. Is it a way to – Charlie, I know you and I have talked about this a little bit. Is it a way to crowd the ballot with a number of constitutional amendments so that Bruce Rauner's term limits question perhaps isn't as noticeable, or is it a way to drive turnout? There's a lot of theories out there.
That is so interesting because you think about the way the ballot is structured. At the top, you have U.S. Senator, which is going to be Dick Durbin and Jim Oberweis, then Governor and Secretary of State, Attorney General, Treasurer, your Congressman, your local state House and Senate, many local offices, and then you're going to have these long potentially a long list of constitutional amendments. And you wonder, are people just going to get fatigued and not even bother answering those questions at the end of the ballot? And that could be an interesting strategy. I'm also intrigued by this idea that the speaker is suddenly, channeling FDR, JFK, and LBJ rolled into one with this highly liberal progressive agenda, the millionaires tax, the voting rights constitutional amendment. He's not a man who's known for his crusading liberalism. And Charlie, I'm sure you can speak to that a little bit.
Well, I would say it's not so much trying to lengthen the ballot or get voters all worn out so they don't get around to the amendments as much as it would be an effort to have something that would appeal to minority voters. Everyone is anticipating that there will be a big drop-off in the minority turnout because it's not a presidential race. Our local hero, Barack Obama, is not at the top of the ticket. And there's concern that the turnout among minorities will not be great, and that would hurt the Democrats up and down the ticket. So if you have a constitutional amendment that would appeal to people and say to them, we're going to make sure that in Illinois – should the day come when Republicans control both chambers, control the governorship, and if they're of the same mindset as some of these Republican governors and legislators in other states, they won't be able to impose the kind of rules and regulations that would make it more difficult for low-income people or people of color to be able to vote. And so this is a reason. You may not be care about who the people are up and down the ballot, but this is a reason for you to show up at the polls and vote for this amendment to protect your rights in the future.
And this would include same-sex couples and others on that list.
Well, it says you can't discriminate based on any of the categories that are now, what would you say, our civil rights laws say you can't discriminate against. And part of the impetus was when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a section of the Voting Rights Act that in essence required states with a long history of discrimination going back hundreds of years to have to submit to the Justice Department any changes in their voting rules for the Justice Department to say, okay, yeah, these don't discriminate, you can go ahead and do it. The Supreme Court struck down that section. And so now the on the one hand, the Republican Party, for political reasons, thinks to the extent that it can limit minority participation, it's to its advantage because the overwhelming political leanings of the minority communities in this country are towards the Democrats. On the other hand, the Democrats don't want to see this happen. They call it disenfranchisement, and they see part of their base being kind of eliminated from the voting process. So there's a lot of politics involved besides just the essential, what would you say, underlying fundamental principle that everyone should be entitled to vote for his or her candidate in the elections, every U.S. citizen.
It still strikes me that I can't remember a year in which there was this much constitutional action at play, potentially. I mean, not only the potential millionaires tax, and there's a move for the graduated income tax, and now this voting rights thing, but you also have the Crime Victims Bill of Rights is moving forward again this year, and then, of course, Bruce Rauner's term limits proposal. I don't know if I'm missing anything, but it seems like this could be more constitutional questions making their way onto the ballot than I remember since I've been a voting age, at least.
Well, but they're not there yet. There's a way to go. And
fair enough.
The citizens' initiatives, there's questions about whether or not they meet the very, very narrow window for citizens' initiatives that's provided in the Constitution. And, for example, with the so-called fair tax, the constitutional amendment that would allow the legislature to create different income brackets and tax those brackets at different income tax rates, there's, if I'm not mistaken, there are already more than enough votes in the House to have signed a petition saying I will not support this to make it impossible for that to pass because it requires a three-fifths majority in both chambers. And there are already what would you
two
say?
Two-fifths who have said that there are more than two-fifths.
Right, yeah, I was trying to do the math in my head. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, more than two-fifths who said they won't support it.
Now, Amanda Venicky, that did pick up some life, the so-called graduated tax. It had failed the first time out in committee level, and it's still in the early stages, but it has a little bit of life in it right now.
Exactly. Some sort of revival. It was because you had seen that it was, as you said, voted down by a House committee, and that was seen as a very big signal that Speaker Michael Madigan, who there's a lot of eyes on and cues to be taken from, had just been in the committee and gotten approval of his millionaire's constitutional amendment proposal, and then that same committee immediately voted that down. And now we are seeing it has a new sponsor, and it did get passage through a Senate committee. So as we talked about, that there's surely a long way to go in terms of getting enough legislators to approve of this to get it on the ballot. But it was nonetheless seen as a sign that maybe it isn't quite dead. This may be something that the new sponsor in the House is Representative Christian Mitchell. He had a very tough reelection and is not beloved by unions because of his vote on the pensions. Could this be a way for him to, I don't know, trying to save face, get in better with them again, perhaps, who knows? He didn't seem to indicate that. He thinks that he'll just be able to be more persuasive, and there had been kind of a stumble in the rollout when it was under the Champaign area Representative Naomi Jacobson for at one point rolling out a tax bracket plan that was a lot higher than
this. She put hard numbers out there that gave the opponent something to seize on. Everybody else had was trying to be very vague about, you know, exactly what
and
the
numbers that
be.
She put out weren't the ones that actually went forward in the legislation, from what I can remember.
I'll still go out on a limb and predict that
no way, no how.
No, that's not going to happen. You know, it's alive in the same sense that when you were in high school biology, you know, and you dissected the frog, you put an electric current on its legs, the legs twitched. That's about how alive this constitutional amendment is.
Well, Illinois is not the traditional home of the Citizens Ballot Initiative, and we've referred to a couple of these ones that are being proposed for constitutional amendment via citizen petition signing. We do have one that would change the remapping process and how it's done in Illinois for legislative maps. The supporters of that say we have enough signatures. What do you really feel they're close to being on the ballot now?
I would say they could have like 1.5 million signatures, and I'm not sure how they overcome the hurdle in the Constitution that says that citizens' initiatives have to be limited to structural and procedural subjects in the legislative article. And I'm not sure how redistricting gets into the procedural elements of it. Now, they'll have the chance to make their case before the Supreme Court, I assume. But I just think that's a very big hurdle to jump. And that language was put in there specifically by delegates to the Constitutional Convention who it was very clear they wanted no part of California with its wide open ability for its citizens to propose amendments and laws and everything else. They wanted it to be very, very narrow. And they did it specifically for the legislative article and what they thought were basically arguments about should we have cumulative voting or should we not have cumulative voting, and that it would be up to the legislature the legislature would be unwilling to propose amendments in that area. So this was one where the citizens could do it.
And so where does term limits, where would one affecting term limits fit in that definition?
Well, the proposal that Bruce Rauner, the Republican candidate for governor, has put forward and is pushing has a couple of appendixes on it. He focuses on the term limits, but there's already been a straight out term limits citizens initiative that the Supreme Court threw out, almost 30 years ago or 20 years ago, because it did not meet this narrow definition. And so he has tacked on a provision changing the process, the procedural thing, saying, to override a governor's veto will require 2/3 instead of 3/5. And he changed structure. He's increased the size of the House and reduced the size of the Senate. And that's his way to, kind of overcome this hurdle so that term limits can sneak in under these procedural and structural changes that are also included in this citizens' initiative.
Does that give it more muscle, you think, in an effort to make it through that Supreme Court?
I think it gives it more, but it's the question, is it enough? And, I mean, we can all sit here and talk about it, but that's going to be up to the justices. It'll be up to at least 4 of the justices to say, yes, it does, before it'll reach the ballot.
Also, at the State House this week, we did hear some Democrats put forth a change in how schools should be funding. Carrie, can you tackle that one?
I can. You know, it's an issue I've been covering for a few months. I used to be an education reporter before I jumped over to politics, and I'm stealing really a phrase from State Representative Christian Mitchell in explaining Democratic State Senator Andy Menard's proposal to change the funding formula. He described it as so simple that it's beautiful. And what would happen right now? Schools get funding in a variety of ways. They get general state aid, and then they get categorical funding, which which is funding for specialized programs. And general state aid is based on poverty levels. Categorical funding is not. And what Menar is proposing is to roll just about all state funding into the same formula and prioritize it based on poverty levels, so that the property poor districts in the state, they in times of bad state budget cuts would not be hurting as much as they do now. Now, this was announced by a group of Democratic senators. They were very excited about this, but it also emerged from a bipartisan Senate Education Committee. And noticeably absent from the introduction of the bill this week were the Republicans on the committee. They're proposing a more piecemeal approach that might deal with Chicago school funding and other funding changes in pieces. So it remains to be seen what legs this proposal has at this point, but it is, I think, the most significant school funding reform piece we have seen in a number of years. And not to yammer on too long, but I also think it's very, very interesting that former Governor Jim Edgar, who was the sitting governor the last time a funding overhaul took place, he's on board with this proposal. And so that may help with some Republican support along the lines.
And that said, Democrats most certainly have enough votes that they don't need Republican support to get it passed.
But I think it would be helpful if it were a bipartisan effort, if for no other reason. There are some school districts that would get less money, other school districts that would get more. According to the data from Senator Menar and the other members of this group, right now only about 44 cents out of every school aid dollar from the state is distributed based on a district's need. As Kerry said, property-poor districts. The rest of the money goes out in these categorical grants to districts that may be very wealthy, a district that may have $1 million or more in property tax value behind each of its students. And when you make those kinds of changes, there are going to be winners and losers. Now, the Senate Democrats didn't want to discuss that issue, and they probably don't know for sure. It'll be up to the State Board of Education to do the analysis. But I can recall as a reporter sitting there in the House when the appropriation for the State Board of Education was under discussion each year, and lawmakers would be flipping through the computer printout looking to see, do the school districts in my legislative district get more or less? And then they voted accordingly. So this is a very, very parochial issue for a lot of lawmakers. But on balance, I think it makes a lot of sense that we should direct our dollars to those districts that need them the most rather than kind of giving money, you know, helter-skelter across the board.
And in our remaining minute or so, we'll do notes from the field. Amanda Venicky.
A state task force this week came out with its report on what to do about Chicago area mass transit agencies and made a whole bunch of recommendations. We won't get into the merit of those, but Rahm Emanuel, the Chicago mayor, did not think much of it, calling the drafters of the report propeller heads.
And Kerry Lester, we'll give you a chance to speak up.
I'd just like to give a shout out to our public affairs reporting intern Shakur Cope's upcoming piece. In addition to talking about Chicago pension reform this week, he's looking at in what dire shape a number of the state's top cities are also in as lawmakers turn their eyes to fixing that problem.
You can look for that story in a lot of newspapers around the state. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Kerry Lester of the Associated Press for joining us. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.